Hare Krishna. Some of you may have seen the title as we go on. The three zones in the war against temptation. So this is a topic of personal application, and I would not like to speak this in any way as a sort of instruction, because I am myself a struggling sadhaka. So I would like to speak this more as a objective analysis of human psychology. So what the way I have prepared this topic is that I'm trying to make a presentation of Bhagavad Gita in terms of contemporary psychology. So I have studied some books, especially nowadays. A big problem in today's world is addictions. The addictions can be of various kinds. Some can be lethal, like say drug addiction or alcohol addiction, and some can be relatively mild. Some people, there is a form of addiction called as screen addiction. Screen addiction means people just can't live without some digital device. Either a mobile or a iPhone or an iPad. They just keep doing something. Now I'll talk about when something becomes an addiction. It's not that just because somebody is working throughout the day on a particular device, that itself does not make it an addiction. So there are three C's of addiction which psychologists talk about. We'll talk about that. And then psychologists talk about, they use these terms. Of course, within psychology, when I use the word psychology, psychology is not one body of knowledge. Because different psychologists have different theories. And often they have, just like within say philosophy, we have war between Advaitavadis and Dvaitavadis. So like that, there are different schools of psychology also, among whom they have internecine wars. So we will just look at some concepts which are relevant to our understanding. So these three zones of the PPT is below, and go down. So of course, I was talking about these various kinds of addiction. So there is deadly addictions are like say drugs, and then just technology addiction is one thing. But in between, there is an addiction which is becoming increasingly widespread. It is what this book is about. It is about addiction to pornography. You know, among various forms of addiction, that is one of the most debilitating, because, you know, for all other, most other forms of addiction, we have to go out of our way. But this is something which just comes on its way to us. So in that sense, it's different. But anyway, all these are various forms of addiction. So, what I'll talk about some psychological terms and concepts, and then we'll see how they relate with Bhagavad Gita and how Bhagavad Gita offers us further insights. Okay. So, sir, basically the broad terms is these three terms I use: safe zone, danger zone, and relapse zone. There are two words, lapse and relapse. We know lapse means a mistake. We say a lapse of concentration. Now somebody is doing something and suddenly some batsman is batting nicely, and then suddenly there's a lapse of concentration and the batsman gets out. So lapse means something which is doing well but we do wrong. Relapse means that a person had a habit of doing something wrong, then the person sets oneself to become right, but then again goes back to the wrong thing. So that's relapse. So with respect to when we face temptations, now, of course, generally when we use the word temptation, for most brahmacharis, it is largely lust. But it's not only lust. It can be greed. It can be anger. It can be pride. But whichever temptation it is, so we often go through these three zones. So safe zone is the time when we are not troubled by temptation. Although we say at one level that, you know, it's a lifelong battle against temptation. It is true, but it's not that 24 hours we are tormented by material desires. The material desires also come in phases sometimes. Sometimes they are very intense. Sometimes they are not so intense. And sometimes they are almost not there. So, now when we are talking about zones, these are obviously not geographical zones. We are talking about consciousness. You know, in a war, there might be safe zones. So, for example, India-Pakistan war is going on. Then the borderline areas are normally, they're vulnerable zones. But the inland might not be vulnerable. So the concept of zones we use, so it is not that these are areas in our consciousness. Rather, our consciousness moves among these areas. Sometimes our consciousness may be in safe zone. Sometimes it may be in the danger zone. Sometimes it may go to relapse zone. So now, danger means at that time, there are temptations which have started coming in. And the temptations are alluring us and we are in a state of indecision. Should I say yes or should I say no? Now, Krishna, if you see, now the broad words that we can use for this is Shama. Shama Krishna describes in several places, in the Bhagavatam as well as in the Gita. In the Bhagavatam, especially in the Bhagavad Gita, it especially comes in the qualities of a Brahmana. Prabhupada translates as peacefulness. So, Shama simply means that the mind is peaceful, the mind is not agitated. Of course, this word Shama is also used in the sixth canto, the different ways of controlling the sense. Yamena cha damena cha, tapasa brahmacharyena shamena cha damena cha. So, Shama and Dhamma, how is that related? Shama means that we just control the mind, focus it on Krishna, so that there is no scope for agitation itself. So, that is always the best thing to do. That fill the mind with positive activities, then we stay in the safe zone. Now, this safe zone doesn't necessarily always have to be devotional or spiritual. Now, even materialistic people have their temptations. Say, a student is very attached to cricket and wants to watch a cricket match. But then, if the student knows, tomorrow is my exam. And then what happens? There is just the sense of urgency and gravity. I have to study. That can also help a person to become absorbed and forget. So, now when we talk about Varnashram, you know, Varnashram, the system of Varnashram itself is not automatically spiritual. And that's why we say that Vishnuraradhyate Pantha Nanyat Tattosha Karanam. The purpose of Varnashram is to satisfy Krishna. What is the meaning of this? Varnashram itself does not automatically satisfy Krishna. The purpose of Varnashram is to satisfy Krishna. So the idea of Varnashram is that even materially, if we are doing activities which we like to do, we can get absorbed in them. And that can also keep us in a safe zone. So we can go in a safe zone because of higher taste in devotion. We can go in a safe zone because of some material taste, which is not sinful. Like, as I said, a painter likes to paint. A scientist likes to think. Author likes to write. A musician likes to play music. That can also get one ahead. Otherwise, even just a sense of urgency. No, Prabhupada said that. It's not that I don't have any lust. It's that I don't have any time for lust. That sense of urgency can also help. So the first zone is Shama, is where we are completely peaceful because of some positive engagement. Now, Dhamma is the case where there are agitations. The word Dhamma literally means sense control. So that is, there are desires in the mind and we are feeling agitated, but we fight and resist the desires. So that involves some sort of inner struggle, inner conflict. And when the desires are there, those desires can grow into actions. And that's why there is a danger zone. Now, what takes a person from Shama, Dhamma, and then relapse zone is Papa. We act in sinful ways. So what takes us down is the triggers. Now, a trigger is something which provokes us, which agitates us. Now, all of us can have different set of triggers. Now, some triggers may be common, but some triggers are also individual. Triggers are of two types. They are internal and external. So, internal and external literally means that in some cases, we are exposed to something provocative. So, here the example of a billboard. You are just going for some program and a subject, obscene billboard is there that agitates the mind. And that is a trigger which takes us from Shama towards Dhamma. It can take us towards Papa also. Right into the relapse zone. But sometimes the triggers can even be internal. If we are just, say, bored because what we are doing is not interesting, or just because we don't have anything to do, or because of whatever reason we are bored, or if we are trying to do some service and we are not able to do that service, we get frustrated because of that, and then we feel I need some release. And in that because we feel we need some release, that desire for release may prompt us to seek release in material enjoyment. And that's how we may have a relapse. So, sometimes when we find ourselves overcome by material desires, and not just overcome mentally, but sometimes even we do wrong things physically. We may engage in self-abuse or whatever we may do. When it happens, such things happen, it is not that a devotee has to become devastated by this. But these things happen. So it's a war and sometimes we may lose. So at one level, we understand that it is ultimately Krishna's mercy which will purify us. And we want Krishna's mercy. But Krishna's mercy also comes in one way is through intelligence. Now Krishna says, you know, if you see, it's very significant that in the heart of the Bhagavad Gita, Chatushloki Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna is telling about the one person who has become Buddha, person who has understood, I am the source of everything, aham sarvasya prabhu mattaha sarvam pravartate. And then next verse he says that these people, what are they doing? They ramantushyanti cha ramanti cha. 10.9 says that they are delighting in me, they are rejoicing in me. And then Krishna says, I give my mercy to them. Now we would think, if somebody is in ecstasy, somebody is delighting in Krishna, now what would that mercy be? We would normally think of that mercy as, you know, maybe some special revelation of Krishna in Vrindavan, some intimate pastimes of Krishna. But then Krishna uses the same. Tesham means those whom he has talked about in 10.9. What does he say? Tesham satata yuktanam bhajitam priti purvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. So to them, I give the intelligence by which they can come back to me. So, and then as if that were not clear enough, tesham evanukampartham aham ajnana jantamaha nashayami atma bhavastho jnana deepena bhasvataha. So Krishna uses the word anukampa very clearly, mercy. So Krishna's mercy is not just in form of taste. Now Krishna's mercy can come in many ways. One is in the form of a taste. Sometimes there's very nice kirtan, very beautiful darshan, you know, very fulfilling kind of association we have with some devotees, senior devotees. That may give us some very much higher taste. That's one way Krishna's mercy can come. But another way Krishna's mercy can come is also by intelligence. Now it's interesting, in 10.8, Krishna uses the word Buddha. And in 10.1, Krishna uses the word Buddhi Yoga. Now what is the relationship and what is the difference between Buddha and Buddhi Yoga? So Krishna says, Buddha is the person who has understood that I am supreme. Aham sarvasya prabhavo mattaha sarvar pravartite iti matva bhajante maam buddha bhava samanvitaha. So one who understands my supremacy and devotes oneself to me, such a person is a Buddha. Now buddhi yoga, as we know, it is the buddhi that enables us to do yoga. You know, in Sanskrit, the sandhi vigraha can be done in different ways. It's buddhi that helps us to do yoga. That means the intelligence by which we can connect with Krishna. Or it can also refer to the yoga that gives us buddhi. The yoga that gives us buddhi. That means it is bhakti yoga by which Krishna gives us intelligence. So Krishna says that it is I who am giving the intelligence. And this we can correlate with mattaha smutir jnanam apohanam cha 15.15. So what this means is that Krishna can give us intelligence. And by that intelligence also, we are able to deal with our anarthas. So at one level, we can, whenever our anarthas trouble, we can say chant Hare Krishna and pray to the deities. Yes, this is very good. But along with that, Krishna has given us intelligence. And if that, using that intelligence, can find us, can help us find ways to deal with our anarthas, then why not? Chanting is extremely important. But ultimately, what is most important is that we remember Krishna. And that we win the battle against our anarthas. Sometimes when we are too disturbed, we may utter the holy name, but we may not be able to take shelter of Krishna. Just the sound just goes on mechanically, but he's not able to take shelter of Krishna. So in some cases, although the holy name is the supreme weapon, the supremacy of the holy name may not be evident to us. So in a war, we have to find out which is the weapon that works for us. So especially for people who are a little bit more intellectual, a little bit more introspective, this kind of analysis can help in understanding what is going wrong and how I can set it correct. And if you see 2.54 to 2.72, Krishna is actually talking about this itself. Now, he's talking about the intellectual basis for sense control. He's analyzing. So now, when we talk about this, safe zone, danger zone, and relapse zone. So each of us have our triggers which take us down. Now, if we are to win this war, now there are two things. Now, one is to know our triggers and to respect our limits. To know our triggers. That means, you know, what provokes me, if I know there is something that provokes me, then I have to observe that. And then I have to decide, okay, this is my limit. If I go beyond this in this direction, then it will get me into trouble. So then I should not go in that direction. So it's ultimately our spiritual advancement is our responsibility. Our safety is our responsibility. Yes, Krishna's mercy is there, but it's our responsibility. So we know our triggers. Okay, this situation, this situation, this situation is what? These are situations in which I tend to get troubled. Now in some cases, we can entirely avoid those situations. In some cases, we may not be able to avoid. But at least if we are not able to avoid, we know the situations when I get provoked, then I can check myself. So I can at least go prepared. When I am prepared, then I can minimize the exposure and I can minimize the damage thereof. So, know your limits, know your triggers, and then respect your limits. Now, what does a limit mean? So the Bhagavatam, for example, says that when a man and a woman come together, it's like the contact of fire and butter. So what does it mean? It simply means that, you know, as fire and butter both have their utility. In fact, you see, fire and butter are brought together for the purpose of yajna, isn't it? So it's not necessarily that they are wrong. You know, butter in another form, ghee, that's vital for yajna. But the point is, in a different context, they should not be brought together. So, know your trigger. You know, butter knows that if I go too close to fire, then I'll melt. And then respect the limit. Okay. That does not mean that fire is bad. That does not mean butter is bad. It simply means that the two cannot come together. So, like that, whatever are our individual limits, we have to find the limits and we respect those limits. So, now, I'll come back to this from once again. After we will go to Bhagavad Gita 2 point, that 54 to 72, we'll look at some verses. But going back to our earlier discussion, I said that we'll talk about addictions. Now, psychologists try to identify when can something be called an addiction. Now, is it that only when the effects are destructive that it becomes addiction? Or is it that when something is not resistible, that's an addiction? So, for example, some people may say that, you know, I cannot live without tea. There are many materialistic people who say that I cannot live without tea. Just because they cannot live without tea, so every day, say 4 o'clock, they feel, you know, I must have tea. Now, is that a tea addiction? Or if somebody says that, you know, I need to have some sweet. You know, something I have to eat. It may be jaggery, it may be sugar, it may be some sweet, whatever it is. I need to have some sweet. Now, does that itself make an addiction? No, actually, addiction means, in general, there are three characteristics. Firstly, there is a craving that is irresistible. A craving that is irresistible. That is the first C. Second is, there are consequences that are dangerous. One knows about the consequences, but still, one is control that is impossible. So the first, there is a craving that is irresistible. You know, I can't live without it. And if I do it, I know that there is danger. I know the consequences are dangerous. But still, I can't give it up. So, craving, consequences, and lack of control. When these three things are there, then things are going in the direction of an addiction. So, now not all now the word addiction itself has a negative tinge to it. But there can be some mild form of things. Some people may be just addicted to TV. In fact, most people in the world today are addicted to TV. Now, is that dangerous? Well, at one level, you can say they're wasting time. We can say that they are getting so much radiations in their eyes or whatever. But that may not be a very dangerous form of addiction. But it will have to be seen individually. What is a form of addiction? What is not a form of addiction? When in the Bhagavatam, and Krishna talks about, when the Bhagavatam talks about redirecting, it's an interesting usage that is there. Prasangamajaram pasham ఆత్మనకవయో విదు సేవ సాధుషు కృతో మోక్షద్వారం అపావృతం. సో హియర్ ద సిగ్నిఫికెంట్ వర్డ్ ఇస్ ప్రసంగ. ప్రసంగ ఇస్ అటాచ్మెంట్ అండ్ ఇట్ ఇస్ ప్రసంగ. వర్డ్ ఇస్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ దిస్ ప్రసంగ. అజరం, జరా మీన్స్ ఓల్డ్ ఏజ్, అజరం మీన్స్ దాట్ విచ్ నెవర్ బికమ్స్ ఓల్డ్. సో ది అటాచ్మెంట్స్ నెవర్ బికమ్ ఓల్డ్. యూ నో ద బాడీ, ద సెన్సెస్ దట్ ఆర్ ఎంగేజింగ్ ద సెన్స్ గార్డ్ కెన్ గో ఓల్డ్, బట్ ద డిజైర్స్ ఫర్ ద ఎంజాయ్మెంట్ డోంట్ గ్రో ఓల్డ్. దట్ ఈస్ ద నేచర్ ఆఫ్ అటాచ్మెంట్. కాలేన నహి యస్య విప్లవః. గజేంద్ర ఆల్సో సేస్ ద సేమ్ థింగ్ ఇన్ హిస్ ప్రేయర్స్ దట్ బై ద పవర్ ఆఫ్ టైమ్ దిస్ డస్ నాట్ గెట్ డిస్ట్రాయిడ్. సో నౌ వెన్ వీ టాక్ అబౌట్ అవర్ అటాచ్మెంట్స్ విచ్ ఆఫన్ డ్రాగ్ అస్ డౌన్, సో ది అటాచ్మెంట్ దట్ ఈచ్ ఆఫ్ అస్ హ్యావ్ ఇస్ డిఫరెంట్. లైక్ ఇఫ్ యు లుక్ అట్ ది పాస్ట్ టైమ్ ఆఫ్ అజామిల్ ఫ్రమ్ దిస్ పాయింట్ ఆఫ్ వ్యూ, లెట్స్ లుక్ అట్ దీస్ త్రీ స్టేజెస్. అండ్ సో వెన్ అజామిల్ వెంట్ అవుట్, హిస్ ఫాదర్ టోల్డ్ హిమ్ టు గో అండ్ గెట్ సమ్ గ్రీన్, గెట్ సమ్ పారాఫెర్నాలియా ఫర్ ద వర్షిప్. నౌ హీ వెంట్ అవుట్ అట్ దట్ టైమ్. ఇట్ వాజ్ నాట్ దట్ హీ వాజ్ కాన్షియస్లీ ప్లానింగ్ టు ఎంగేజ్ ఇన్ ఎనీ ఫార్మ్ ఆఫ్ సెన్స్ గ్రాటిఫికేషన్ ఆఫ్ ఆల్ డౌన్. So more or less at that time, he was in a safe zone. But then he went out and then he saw the Shudra and Shudrani. They were embracing and doing all sorts of things. So that was a trigger for him. And by perceiving that, by observing that, he entered into a danger zone. Now when you entered into the danger zone, what happened at that particular time was that, see, when as soon as one realizes one is in danger zone, come out. Come out. But he did not come out. He just stayed on, continued the exposure, and then, although he did not do anything immediately, but those impressions were burnt in his mind, and then, once they were burnt in his mind, they burnt his intelligence. And then, he called that Shudrani, and then he just fell down. So, eventually, from the danger, he went to a relapse zone. So, what happens is that, from the safe zone to the danger zone to the relapse zone, there are triggers which take us down. Now, it's not that a Maya has a endlessly new array of weapons. No, the Maya is not going to create some new sense objects in terms of some unheard category. No, the sense objects are fixed. Although they may have different appearances because of which they may seem differently alluring. But we know what overall the triggers are. And then, knowing what our triggers are, we can plan how to combat them. Now, when we talk about the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna talks about combating the senses in two significant verses, where he talks about the danger to the danger of the senses, danger of, say, lack of alertness leading to sense gratification. Now, these two verses, although they seem similar, there is a difference. The first verse comes in 2.60, where Krishna says, most of you know this verse, you can repeat after me. Yatato hi api kaunteya purushasya vipaschitaha indriyani pramathini haranti prasabham manaha. So, Krishna is telling over here, there are actually each of these lines has one significant count, point in this. First he is saying, yatato hi api kaunteya. Such a person is endeavoring. And not only the person endeavoring, purushasya vipaschitaha. The person is also discriminating. Discriminating and endeavoring. But in spite of that, indriyani pramathini. The senses are mad. And what do the senses do? Haranti prasabham manaha. So we know that in the third chapter later, in the 42nd verse, Krishna will talk about this hierarchy. Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhya param manah manasastu para buddhe yo buddhe paratastu saha. That above the body is the senses, above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, and above the intelligence is the soul. And Prabhupada says in the purport, about the soul is the super soul. So now in this verse, Krishna is talking about the fall from the senses to the mind. He says that the senses are so strong and impetuous. Prabhupada translates pramathini not just as one word but as two words. Indriyani pramathini says so strong and impetuous. The senses drag the mind down. And then they says that although the person is vipaschitaha and yatato. Now vipaschitaha, that is discriminating. That is the characteristic of the intelligence. So that means the intelligence is trying to hold the person up, but the senses drag the mind down. And afterward the person goes down. Now, after this in 2.67, Krishna talks about it once again. And then let's look at what is the difference between this and that verse. Can recite this, repeat this verse also. Indriyanam hi charatam. Indriyanam hi charatam. Yanmano anuvidhiyate. Anuvidhiyate. Tadasya harati pragyam. Vayurnavamimambhasi. Navamimambhasi. So now, this verse is talking about not the senses and the mind. It is talking about the mind and the intelligence. Indriyanam hi charatam. The senses are wandering constantly. But when the senses are wandering, then on one of the senses or one of the objects only the senses are focusing. Yan mano anuvidhiyate. When the mind focuses on one of the objects, then what happens? Tadasya harati pragyam. So here pragya is a cognate. It's similar. It's synonym for buddhi, for intelligence. So what happens is when the mind focuses on one of the objects on which the senses are dwelling, then that drags away the intelligence. Tadasya harati pragyam. And then Krishna gives the example. Vayur navamivambhasi. Now this example is interesting. What it illustrates is Vayur navam ivambhasi. So normally the boat is floating on the river, and often the boat is meant to be assisted by the wind. An expert boats person, they navigate in such a way that they can catch the right breeze. So if they catch the right breeze, then the breeze helps them to move forward. But here Krishna is saying, Vayur navam ivambhasi. Just as a strong wind can blow away a river, a boat, similarly, it's blown away. Now, what exactly is blown away? So, what is the wind and what is the boat exactly in this example? So, what he says is, Tadasya harati pragyam. So, what is blown away is the intelligence. And what happens is, that when the senses and the mind come together, that means the senses are always, you know, we can't live in this world with closed senses. We can't close our eyes while walking along the streets. And of course, even if you close our eyes, there are so many images that can come in the mind also. So we can't just avoid that. But the problem will be anuvidhiyate, when you focus on them. So when you focus on them, then what that creates is, it creates a gust of lust. A gust is a very strong wind. So when we focus on the sense objects, that creates a strong wind. And that wind drags away. That wind that when it is generated, that drags away, that sweeps away the intelligence. So, although both the verses are similar in one sense, they are basically talking about how internally a person falls away. But the difference between the two verses is on the focus. You know, when Krishna is talking first in 2.60, he is answering the first question. You know, Arjuna asks four questions. Ita pragyasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava. Sitadhi kim prabhasheta kim asita vrajeta kim. So now the first question, ka bhasha, is answered in 2.55. And then sita pragyasya ka bhasha, samadhistasya keshava. Ka bhasha. Now the bhasha, Baldevi Devashan explains, bhashyate iti bhasha. That, you know, bhasha, language, is used to describe. So whenever we observe something, we use language as a tool to describe things. So he says, what we describe are the characteristics, the symptoms of things. So ka bhasha means, what are the characteristics of a sense control person, of sitta pragya. So that Krishna answers in the first verse. Then in the next two verses, he answers, kim prabhasheta, how does a person speak? And then thereafter, from 58 to 61, Krishna answers, kim asita, how does such a person sit? And then from 62 onwards till 71, Krishna is answering, kim vrajet, how does such a person walk? Now sitting and walking is not referring to some fashion model's style of sitting and walking. It is referring to how a person controls the senses and how a person engages the senses. So when Krishna is talking, the first example is giving Yathatohyapi Kaunteya. He's talking about a person who is trying to restrain the senses. And the second example is he's talking when Krishna is, when somebody is trying to engage the senses. What do I mean by this difference? What I'm trying to say is that if you look in 2.60, the focus of the example is that the person is basically trying to keep the senses calm. That's why the previous word, two verses before that, it was said that Yada samahrate chayam kurmo angani vasarvashaha indriyan indriyarthe bhitasya prajna pratishtita. Just as a tortoise withdraw the senses, so withdraw the senses inwards. So here Krishna is telling that when we are trying to withdraw the senses, even when we are trying to withdraw the senses, still the senses are so wild that they will drag a person away. So that means even when one is trying to be not engaging with the world, but when he's trying to withdraw and go inwards, still the senses will drag one away. Whereas in the next section, Krishna is talking about Vrajeta Kim. We have to act in the world, but while acting in the world, how do we act? Raga Dvesha Vimuktaistu Vishayan Indriyashar. Act according to scripture. But while we are acting according to scripture, we are going around doing our services. So at that time, Indriyanam Hicharatam. Now we have to look around when we are walking in the world, acting in the world. But then, with anubidhiyate. Anubidhiyate is when we focus on something. When we focus on something, that is the beginning of the fall. You know, what we hold mentally holds us mentally. What we hold mentally, if we just keep holding on something mentally, eventually that will hold us mentally. When we say, go away, it will not go away. It will catch hold of us. So, anubidhiyate. That anubidhiyate is the problem. So, what is happening over here? That when we do anubidhiyate, then that is basically we are letting ourselves be triggered. We are letting ourselves get caught by the trigger. And from there, we start going down, down, down. And eventually, we relapse. So, yanmano anubidhiyate. So, with respect to the first set, when Krishna is talking about 2.60, the focus is not so much on external sense object. Krishna is not talking about any external sense object in 2.60. No, he's just saying that the senses are so wild, the senses will drag a person away. Whereas in 2.67, Krishna is talking about external sense object on which the mind focuses. So we can broadly correlate with 2.60 is talking about an internal trigger. That means the person is trying to control the senses, but some memory comes along and the senses in the mind are dragged away. But 2.67 is talking about an external trigger, which a person observes something, contemplates on it, and then is dragged away. Either way, now the important point is what over here? The important point is that not that we bother so much about what is the external trigger or what is the internal trigger. The important point is that we recognize this danger and focus ourselves on Krishna. Now in the Mahabharata, the Pandavas, when they go to the forest, they are basically 13 years in the forest, out of which 13th year is in Ajnatavas. And before that, so after from the second year to the seventh year, for 5 years, Arjuna goes to heavens. And then after that, for 4 years, from the eighth year to around 12th year, they stay in Badrikashram. And then they come down near the, they are more or less near the, these are rough dates, but broadly they are correlated with what is described in the Mahabharata. So, when the Pandavas, when Arjuna gets the mantras through Yudhishthir from Narad Muni, then he goes to the heavens. And Narad Muni also tells the Pandavas, he's gone to heavens to do, he will go austerities and get weapons, but you also try to increase your piety. So they all start going upward towards the Himalayas. And eventually they reach Kubera's ashram, Kubera's gardens, and they're living in the gardens. And at that time, sages come and inform them that now Arjuna will soon come back. And then they see it's almost like a new sun has risen in the sky. And then they see that, what is that? That is Maithili's chariot. And on that, Arjuna is seated. And Arjuna comes down, and the Pandavas are delighted to be reunited with him. Then Arjuna tells of all the adventures which were there in heaven. And after the adventures are over, then they start staying in the in Kubera's ashram, Kubera's gardens. And then one day, Bhima and Arjuna both come to Yudhishthir. And they tell him that, I think we should leave this place now. It's 12th year. The 12th year is not ended, but still they are somewhere in the 12th year. And he says, you know, we have been very comfortable over here. This has almost been like heaven. And we have not felt any of the pains of forest living over here. But he says, too much comfort will make us complacent. In the future, a big war is inevitable for us. And in order to prepare for that war, we have to be alert. So let us return back to the earth, go to Kamya 1, and there we will plan our future course of action. So Yudhishthira considers their words and then he agrees. And they depart from there. So now, of course, the Pandavas at one level are exalted devotees who are always absorbed in Dharma and in Krishna. But on another level, they're demonstrating that actually when a person goes into too much comfort, then the person can forget what is one's purpose. So although they are in a comfortable situation, they leave the comfortable situation so that being in a slight state of discomfort can help them to remember their purpose. So in this world, you know, we are all in the mode of passion to a large extent. We are trying to move from passion to goodness and then ultimately to transcendence. But most of us still, especially, you know, even if we are practicing sadhana strictly, still biologically itself, you know, when we are in youth, the passion is there. And even if we decide artificially that I want to live a peaceful life, we will not be able to live very peacefully. Because the passion is itself there. And unless we give a constructive channel for the passion will find a destructive channel. So the passion will have to be expressed. The passion itself can't be suppressed. But the important thing is that expression of passion does not necessarily have to lead to degradation. The passion, the word passion, you know, Krishna uses in two contexts. Krishna uses passion, if he says tada rajastamo, that's Bhagavatam. When Krishna uses the word passion, he uses it for defining quality of passion is pravritti. So when Krishna says prakasham cha pravrittim cha moham eva cha pandava. Na dveshti sam pravrittani nivrittani kaangshati. In 14.22, when he is giving one word description of each of the modes. So prakasha is illumination. So illumination is a characteristic of goodness. And pravritti is action. Action according to one's inclination. That is the characteristic of passion. And then mohameva cha pandava. Moha is illusion. That is the characteristic of ignorance. So now, prakasha, illumination is good for bhakti. If we are illuminated, then we can make wise choices. We can act properly. Now, pravritti in and of itself doesn't have to be bad. Now, whether that pravritti, whatever is the pravritti, what is the inclination, if acting according to inclination or inclination takes us along the path of dharma or takes us away from the path of dharma, that is important. So, the passion that is there, if we channelize it constructively, then that can create absorption for us. And although that absorption may not be entirely transcendental, you know, just like I gave at the start of the safe zone when you talk about it, it's not that the safe zone necessarily has to always be transcendental zone. Yes, sometimes we can be transcendental in the sense that we feel very absorbed in Krishna. But other times, even when we are not absorbed in Krishna, we can still be constructively engaged. And even that engagement can act as a protection. So, now, to some extent, having some level of passion, that means, you know, having some things to do. Okay, do this, do this, do this, do this. That can help in creating a sense of urgency, in creating a sense of engagement, and in creating a place for ourselves in the safe zone. Now, when we act according to our pravritti, there are two dangers. The first danger is that it is very easy to feel oneself as the karta. Because when I act according to my nature, usually I am good at what I am doing. And when I am good at what I am doing, it's very difficult to think that I am not doing this. No, I'm only doing it. Yeah, I'm not doing it, but I'm doing it. It becomes like that. It is a conscious denial and a subconscious acceptance. Consciously, I'm not doing it. It's all Krishna's mercy. But subconsciously, no. I am so talented, you know. I am doing it. So, what do we do in such a situation? No, we cannot stop acting. Because stopping acting will simply mean that we will be dragged down by passion into wrong engagements. So, if you look at the broad principle of bhakti, I discussed this in our last class also. I don't know whether the last class. We talked about devotional service. Now, devotional service is a compound word. There is a noun and there is an adjective. Service is the noun and devotional is the adjective. So now normally, when there are two, when there's a word like this, devotional service, the primary, generally the noun is the primary thing and the adjective is the describer for the noun. So we can keep piling up describers. Now we can have service, then we can have devotional service, then we can have pure devotional service. Now we know that we cannot get to do pure devotional service without doing devotional service. We cannot get to pure devotional service without doing devotional service. It is only by sadhana bhakti that eventually we will come to bhava and prema bhakti. Sometimes we say by vaidhi sadhana bhakti will come to raganuga bhakti. Actually raganuga bhakti is also part of vaidhi bhakti only. Raganuga bhakti is also part of sadhana bhakti only. But the highest is the bhava and prema. So anyway, the point is, just as we cannot come to pure devotional service without devotional service, similarly, we cannot come to devotional service without service. So that means that we have to, it's more important to keep ourselves engaged. Now, engaged doesn't necessarily mean we have to be running around. Engage us means that basically we are some way connected with Krishna. And if you look at the levels which Krishna talks about also in the 12th chapter, he talks from 12.8 to 12.12. He talks about different levels. So first he says, just be absorbed in me. Now that is the best way to be in the safe zone. Mayeva maya dhatsva mai buddhim niveshaya. But when that is not possible, then he says, try to fix the mind on me. Abhyasa yogena tato mamichchaptam dhananjaya. That is a conscious endeavor. We try to keep our mind fixed on Krishna. When that doesn't work out, then what does he say? Abhyasepya samarthosi matkarma paramo bhava. In 12.10 he says, work for me. Work for me. And then later on he says, if you can't work for me, then at least sacrifice the fruits of your work for some good cause. And Krishna is saying, by all these, eventually one will attain perfection. So in one sense, all these engagements are in the safe zone. Now, within the safe zone also, there can be different levels. Just as, even within remembrance of Krishna, there can be different levels. You know, when one is remembering Krishna as the Virat Rupa, and when one is remembering Krishna as Shyam Sundar Krishna, there is a difference in the levels. But for a sadhaka, that difference in level doesn't matter. For sadhaka, yena kena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayat. Somehow other fix the mind on Krishna. Similarly, at our level, whatever way we can keep ourselves engaged in Krishna, that is good. That will keep us in the safe zone. And from the safe zone, we can move upward and upward, closer to Krishna. And the closer to Krishna we go, the safer and safer we become. So, one last point before maybe I can have some comments or questions. When we talk about these three zones, safe, danger and relapse, these are at one level, as I said, you know, it's we locate our consciousness in one of these zones. But at another level, these are also there may also be samskaras in our consciousness which place us in safe, danger or relapse zones. What does that mean? That means that say if somebody has been brought up in a pious, with a pious upbringing, maybe you know from childhood one is hearing Ram Katha, Krishna Katha, going to temples. Sometimes even when we are traveling in locals, now if somebody touches the food to somebody else, that person is local, but still that person will move his hand and then touch the hand to the head. The person may not even be aware I have done this. But the person does that. Now why does that happen? That is because of samskara, that sort of instinctive behavior comes up. So That way, you know, all of us may have, when I said we all of us can have our own individual triggers, similarly, all of us can have our individual safe zones also. So there may be certain things which, because of our past upbringing, because of our childhood impressions, we may find that these are the things in which we can get absorbed and stay engaged. So it's not just that we find out what are our triggers and we try to stay away from the triggers, but we can also find out what are our safe zones. And this can also be individual. Some devotees may find that, you know, when there's some very nice kirtan, I get absorbed and lost in that. Some other devotees, they find that, you know, if I just start reciting verses and memorizing verses, there's nothing like that. Some other devotees may find that, okay, when I start reciting Vaishnava songs, that's what absorbs me. Or some other devotees find, you know, I just start discussing philosophy with some other devotees. That's what absorbs me. So, what is the safe zone for us may also vary according to our nature. And then, sometimes what happens is we focus more on our negatives than our positives. That means, you know, oh, this is my danger zone, this is my danger zone, this is my trigger, this is my trigger. But then, contemplation on the trigger can itself become a trigger. That means thinking that this is a danger for me can also become a danger itself. So we don't have to think too much about the dangers. Our focus is to be thinking about Krishna and thinking about things which keep us close to Krishna. And overall, in the battle against temptation, you know, Krishna is ever helpful. And that's why we should be ever hopeful. Krishna is ever helpful. Krishna never leaves our heart and goes away. Krishna never rejects us. Krishna is ever helpful. So we should always be, we should be ever hopeful. As we say, Asha Baddha. That's one of the characteristics of a devotee, which Nectar of Devotion also talks about. Knowing that Krishna is there with us. We do our analysis. Sometimes the analysis may help. Sometimes the analysis may not help. But knowing that Krishna is there, and no matter how many times we fall, Krishna is there to help us live, to help us rise and to continue on. That can help us to go on and eventually go through the danger zone to the safe zone and ultimately become absorbed in Krishna. And then as Prabhupada said, is there a level of Krishna consciousness that we can come to from which there will be no fall? Satsuru Maharaj asked him, Prabhupada said, yes, there is. But you'll have to work to get there. So we can all get there. I myself am very far away from that. I can do this sort of intellectual analysis is my more safe zone than remembrance of Krishna. So don't let this sort of intellectual analysis put you into any illusion that I am beyond all these temptations. But just this sort of intellectual analysis, one way I can try to keep myself safe. But this is some ways we can see how all of us can fight our battles and ultimately win our battles. So I'll summarize. I started by talking about how the Bhagavad Gita offers us many valuable psychological insights, which, you know, when we just read the verses, those insights may not strike us. But then if we try to analyze them using the terminology which psychologists have given, then we can start seeing the same things in new light, in fresh light. So that's why I took the Bhagavad Gita concept in terms of this terminology of safe zone, danger zone and relaxed zone. So the area when we are free from temptation, that is the safe zone. And what takes us from there towards temptation is our triggers. They can be external or internal. And then we discussed about the external and internal triggers based on 2.60 and 2.67. And then even when there is a relapse, still we can always rise and come back. And that rising and coming back ultimately depends on our taking shelter of Krishna. Then we discussed about how there can be various kinds of safe zones for us. And the basic point is that we all have passion. So we shouldn't think that just staying in goodness is a source of safety. Yes, it can be, but we can't wish away the passion. So just as the Pandavas accepted austerity so that they could do activity. Similarly, whatever passion we have, we try to find a constructive channel for it. And then by that constructive channelization of our passion, there'll be purification and ultimately we'll go into the safe zone. So thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Two dangers in doing only one.
Okay, sorry, yeah. The first danger in doing what we like to do is that we get the feeling of the karta. And the second danger is that we feel like doing only that thing. And then often, whatever are our other prescribed devotional activities, for example, even our sadhana, we feel, forget it, I don't want to do this. So then, there has to be, we have to have a balanced program of spiritual nourishment. Sometimes, some things which are important for us, but because we don't feel like doing them, so we neglect them completely. Now, certainly, there is a certain amount of freedom. Some things which we like to do, we can always do them more. But just completely neglecting other activities may not be suitable. Then we are, if we are doing that, then we may be more driven just by our material nature, and not so much, we may not ascend to our spiritual nature. We are acting for Krishna, but we are acting almost entirely according to our material nature only. That is also not desirable so much. It's good, at least we are not going into non-devotional activities. But then our ultimate goal is to transcend our material nature also. So for that, the prescribed devotional program, we do according to our inclinations, but along with that, if there are some things which we have to do not according to our inclination, which are important for our devotional growth, then we do them also. Is that clear? Yes. Any other questions? Yes, from.
In this safe zone, the second bullet, focusing on something constructive. So I'm just not able to understand this due to urgency, actually. Many times, as you said, it might not be something totally transcendental thing, something according to our psychophysical nature. So a painter likes to paint or something. So many times it might not be due to urgency that we want to do in these activities, just to engage ourselves for a...
Actually, when I explained it, I said there are two different points. It's not necessarily focus on something constructive or focus due to urgency. When I say something constructive is, if we like something, if something is according to nature, we just do it because we want to. And another is, if there is a deadline, even if we don't like it, we'll get absorbed in it because of the urgency. So the two can be distinct points. They're not exactly the same. Okay. Any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Shila Prabhupada ki Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.